If you ache for truth, goodness, and beauty, if you're hungry for a Christianity with substance and strength, if you long for a faith that's big and bold and biblical and all about Jesus Christ, if you're inspired by the idea of one church that has spanned 20 centuries, 24 time zones, and two hemispheres, enfolding every race, nation, and language, then you're considering Catholicism.
As God instructed, when he arrived, the child was named Isaac, which meant laughter, because through him God kept a promise that seemed absurd, even to Abraham and Sarah. Sarah had the joy of raising Isaac to manhood, and then she passed away at 127 years old. Abraham was an immigrant among the Canaanites, but they respected him greatly as one of the wealthiest and most influential men in the region, a prince among them. And so, the Hittites of the hill country offer to let Abraham pick for Sarah from among the finest of their tombs. But Abraham graciously refuses their offer. Instead, he selects a cave on a hillside and insists on paying full price to the owner for the property. Abraham is always conscious of God's covenant with his family, in which they must remain distinct from the pagan peoples around them. They must not make the same mistake that Lot did, becoming assimilated into the local culture. Sarah will not be buried in a pagan Canaanite tomb, no matter how polite their invitation. Instead, Abraham buries Sarah in the cave of Machpelah, located about 19 miles south of Jerusalem, in what became the city of Hebron. It's a significant place, because when Abraham dies himself, he is buried next to her. And then Isaac, their son, is buried in this family tomb. And eventually, Isaac's son Jacob, who we'll meet in this episode. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are known in Judaism and Christianity as the three patriarchs, the foundation of the covenant nation of Israel. And with all three of them at rest in the cave of Machpelah in Hebron, it is known as the Cave of the Patriarchs. Someday, if you come with me on a pilgrimage to Israel, perhaps we'll visit it together. Over and over again in the Old Testament, the Lord is referred to as the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. It distinguishes Israel from all the other peoples of the world, the nations as we learned they are called in episode 7. God made a covenant with Abraham. That seed grew into a stalk through Isaac, and it blossomed out into the 12 tribes of Israel through Jacob. That is the genesis and genealogy of Israel, and as we'll see later in this course, Christ selected 12 apostles to found the new Israel, the church. And that's another reason why, as we saw in episode 8, that Genesis chapter 12 marks such an important turning point in the Old Testament. Before that, it's primeval history. After that, it's recorded as ancient history, something that we can see and touch. We can go to the tomb of the patriarchs in Hebron to this day. After Sarah passes away, Abraham makes provision for the covenant to continue. Isaac needs a wife, but for the same reason that Lot could not live among the cities of the plain and Sarah could not be buried in a Hittite tomb, Isaac cannot marry a Canaanite woman. God made his covenant with Abraham's family, and they must continue to trust God and remain faithful to him by being distinct, not assimilating into the culture and the religion of the Canaanites. So Abraham, now a very old man whom the Lord had blessed in every way, prepares to fulfill his final important duty. He makes one of his trusted servants swear an oath to go back to Haran, find a wife for Isaac from among the relatives there, and bring her back to Canaan. The servant asks Abraham, "What if I can't find a young woman who is willing to travel so far from home? Should I take Isaac back to Haran to live among your kinfolk there?" "No," Abraham snaps. "Never, ever take my son there. For the Lord, the God of heaven, who took me from my father's house and my native land, solemnly promised to give this land to my descendants. the Lord will provide a wife from there to come to my son. If he does not, if no young woman will return with you, I free you from your oath. But under no circumstances are you to take my son there." Once again, Abraham trusts the covenant promise of God. To return to Haran would be the same sin that Lot's wife committed, looking back toward Sodom. So the servant goes to Haran with a caravan of camels loaded with expensive gifts as a dowry for some suitable young woman. He travels from Canaan back to the town where Abraham's brother had settled. When he arrives, he waters his camels at a well. It is evening, and the women of the town are coming out with their jars to draw water for their homes. Now, let's take a moment to talk about how great stories always have recurring themes or set pieces, what are sometimes called tropes. They frame our expectations for what's about to happen in the story. So, for example, in a classic romance novel, a young woman from a lower social class might find herself in a new city facing difficult circumstances when she meets a kind and handsome stranger from above her social station who helps her with some small matter. Now, in a romance novel, that's a hint, a first sign that the story is going to build a romance between them. Or, in a classic Western movie, if bad guys are terrorizing a town and we see a handsome stranger on a big white horse riding over the prairie toward the town, we know that justice is coming. In the Old Testament, women coming out to a well are just such a trope. A traveling stranger comes to water himself or his animals at a well when the local women come out to gather water. Hebrews would have heard this and smiled, just like we smile during the romance or the Western when the handsome stranger shows up, because it signals that a marriage is coming. Isaac's wife is found at this well. Later, his son Jacob will find his wife when he stops at a well. Moses finds his wife when he stops at a well in the desert, fleeing Egypt. And when we get to the New Testament, we'll see that this trope is used to signal a very different kind of marriage. Jesus at one point stops at a well in Samaria, and he meets a woman that has lived a hard life, full of shame and shunned by her neighbors. Now, those familiar with the Old Testament did not miss the significance of that, because Jesus talks to her about the coming of his bride, the church. Now, we'll save that story until then, but again, the story the scriptures tell is a big, integrated story between the bookends of Genesis 1-2 and Revelation 21-22, with layers and connections, earlier episodes pointing forward, later episodes recalling what came before. So, Abraham's servant prays that God will make known to him the right wife for Isaac. And God answers, introducing him to a young woman named Rebekah, carrying her water jar to the well. He asks her who her father is, and she names her family. The servant praises the Lord, who has led him right to Abraham's relatives. The servant explains his mission to her father and her brother. Rebekah and her family are honored and thrilled that she should be the wife of the mighty Abraham's son. So they negotiate a suitable marriage contract and dowry, and then Rebekah departs for Canaan to meet her future husband. As the caravan departs, they bless her for being chosen to be an instrument of the covenant. "Our sister, may you become the mother of many millions. May your descendants be strong and conquer the cities of their enemies." And then Rebekah and her servant girls mounted the camels and joined Abraham's envoy and his entourage for the journey to Canaan. Genesis tells us that Isaac brought Rebekah to his mother Sarah's tent, and she became his wife. He loved her deeply, and she was a special comfort to him after the death of his mother. In time, Abraham also passes away. The Bible tells us that he had lived for 175 long and satisfying years. His sons Isaac and Ishmael, his bastard son by the Egyptian servant Hagar, buried him in the cave of Machpelah, next to Sarah. Afterwards, God blessed Isaac, who moved out into the Negev to graze his flocks and herds. Ishmael and his clan moved south, or according to both the Old Testament and the Quran, they became the Arab tribes. The Bible doesn't record as many of Isaac's adventures as it does of his father or his son. He is the promised child that moves the story forward. The most significant thing that he does is have two sons. Another generation will inherit the covenant. But the story of his son's birth and their birthright sheds light on the nature of God's promise-keeping. Rebekah becomes pregnant with twins. The Lord tells her that her sons will found two rival nations, with the older son's people serving the younger son's tribe. When the time comes, the first son to emerge is covered with thick hair. They name him Esau. But the younger son, Jacob, comes out right after him, with his hand grasping Esau's heel. Esau and Jacob's rivalry is a fascinating story. In short, Esau is a straightforward, simple guy. He's his dad's favorite son. He doesn't pay much attention to all the tribal politics going on between the women and servants in the tents at camp. He's a man's man who spends his day in the field, working with the animals and hunting. But Jacob is his mother's favorite. He hangs out in camp among the women and the servants, maneuvering for advantage. He becomes a subtle, tricky fellow. Now, if that sounds something like the serpent from Eden, you're not far off. Jacob isn't Satan, nor is he evil per se, but he does have a crooked streak in him. He manipulates his brother, who seems either simple-minded or too simple to care, into transferring his birthright as the firstborn to him. And then he tricks Isaac, straight up lying to his own father on his father's deathbed to receive his blessing as the inheritor of the covenant promise given to Abraham instead of his older brother. Incidentally, this may be the source of the English expression, "Are you pulling my leg?" Jacob came out of the womb pulling on his brother's leg, and he grows up to be a tricky, deceptive fellow. Of course, Esau is understandably very angry with his brother, and he schemes to murder him as soon as Isaac dies. So Rebekah seizes the initiative. She sends Jacob back to her brother in Haran to hide out until Esau cools off. She can also not stand the thought of Jacob marrying one of those Canaanite girls around them. She instructs Jacob to select a wife from among her tribe back home so that all the covenant promises can be preserved through him. After all, with her help, he has finagled the inheritance and Isaac's blessing. She sends him on his way with a blessing to him. "May your descendants multiply and become many nations. May God pass on to you and your descendants the blessings he promised to Abraham, and may you own this land God gave to Abraham." On his way to Haran, the Lord appears to Jacob in a dream. He tells Jacob that he is the God of Abraham and Isaac, and he reaffirms that the covenant will pass on to Jacob. His descendants will be as numerous as the dust of the earth, and all of the peoples of the earth will be blessed through him. And he will protect Jacob from all dangers so that these promises can be fulfilled. Now, this seems problematic, doesn't it? After all, Jacob is not a good guy. He was not a righteous man who trusted God like his grandfather Abraham or his ancestor Noah. He schemed and lied to his brother and father to inherit the covenant birthright. So why should God bless him this way? Well, it is a riddle. And St. Paul recognized that it was a riddle, which is why in his letter to the Romans, he uses the story of Jacob and Esau as an illustration of how God's plans are often hard for us to grasp. We don't understand why God chose to honor Jacob. Paul straight up says that it isn't because of anything that Jacob did or earned. But in his sovereign will and justice, it is how God has chosen to unfold his story of redemption and restoration. Paul tells us that we have to trust God, even when it's hard to do, just like Noah or Abraham did. Jacob accepts God's blessing, and for the first time in the story, acknowledges the Lord by building an altar, naming the place Bethel, or the house of God. You can still visit in Israel today. Jacob arrives in Haran, and of course, he meets his future wife by a well. But he is forced to spend 14 long years working for his uncle, who manipulates him with the same sort of tricks that Jacob played on his own family. But over the years he spends there working for his uncle, who becomes his father-in-law, Jacob's flocks and herds multiply, and he marries both of his uncle's daughters, plus two of their servants that he takes as wives. So in the end, he comes back with great wealth, 4 wives and 11 sons. But on his way back to Canaan, with his wives, servants, entourage, and herds, Jacob has a strange supernatural encounter. After he sends his caravan across the river into Canaan, Jacob is alone on the other side as the sun is setting. A man appears, and for some reason, Jacob wrestles with this stranger throughout the night. Now, neither man can overpower the other. They fight to a stalemate. But as dawn is breaking, the stranger touches Jacob's hip socket, wrenching it so as to partially cripple him. But Jacob still will not release him. He demands that the stranger bless him. Does he realize that this is a manifestation of the Lord? He demands that the stranger tell him his name, which the stranger will not do. Although we'll see in a future episode that Jacob's descendant Moses will ask the Lord the same question in the wilderness and get a curious answer. Instead of giving Jacob his name, the Lord, in the form of this stranger, gives Jacob a new name, Israel or Ishrael. In Hebrew, Ishrael means he who struggles with or against God. And that name describes the man named Jacob, now the man named Ishrael or Israel, and his descendants. They, and in some sense we, are people who struggle with God, who push back against God's will, who do not easily follow God's call. If we're honest, we have to admit that we're an argumentative, double-minded, weak, recalcitrant people, stubborn sheep that will not follow our shepherd. And thus, this son of Isaac, Abraham's grandson, becomes Israel, and his sons will be the founders of the 12 tribes of Israel, which will compose the covenant nation, Israel. And we, the church, founded on the headstrong Saint Peter, have been grafted into the people who wrestle with God.